Welcome back. I hope, however, time was spent in movement practice, it was a felt of benefit in some way, nurturing or nourishing. And as I said, we'll just move right into the sit. So I'm going to ask each of us to allow our bodies or invite our bodies to come into a posture that allows us to feel upright and alert. And this doesn't necessarily mean sitting, it's more the energetics. So just listen to what your body. What will be most supportive for your body? For some of us, it might just mean to laying down or standing. But it's this cultivating the energy of being available, being awake, alert, that these are indeed ennobling practices. So we take our seat as a way to meet that energy of these noble teachings. And again, allowing the feet. Just sometimes it's helpful. I like to just press on the balls of my feet a little bit, just grounding, connecting to the earth's energies, as well as the energies of the heavens around us. For our anchor of the sit today, kind of two steps. And if you like the first one and want to stay with it, great. And if you want to play with the second one, that's great too. But just pay attention to what feels like it's going to be most useful, of most benefit for you in this sit. So, yeah, kind of closing the eyes, letting the first moments just again to anchor into the body, feeling the feet on the floor, sit bones, the chair, the cushion, the bed, the couch, whatever supporting you. Just allow that sense of, oh, I am supported, the earth. The chair, whatever. Easing into a longer exhale, if that's helpful. And as I said, for the anchor, I'm going to invite us to work with the mind, the thinking mind. And those great images of the mind is like the vast blue sky, and the thoughts are like clouds, puffy clouds sometimes, or horse tails, or giant storm clouds. Or the mind, like the vast ocean waves. And sometimes the waves are choppy, and sometimes it's still, and sometimes they're massive waves. So, this orienting towards the mind is incredibly spacious. And then thoughts come through. Sometimes we can get so, thoughts can seem so big, like they take up the whole canvas or they take up the whole sky. And so we kind of are almost stepping back a little bit in this observer place to watch what thoughts come. And they may be thoughts of planning, as I said before, judging, comparing, list making. Ruminating, having conversations, replaying conversations. We all know the myriad of directions the mind can go. And this first invitation is just, hey, check this out. When we're just observing, what does the mind do? What are the habit forms that come? So we're staying some attention in the body, feeling the feet. And then we're just noticing, well, this is what it's like in the mind. This thought comes, this one, sometimes it's the same one a lot, or similar, same story we've told, or replaying something we've already heard. And we're just honoring, oh, this is what's happening in the mind. Gentle curiosity, not needing to change it. We're just being curious. And that might feel like just what, that's enough. Just to stay with the observing the thought patterns or these cloud patterns or these waves to bring all the metaphors in. Sense of, okay, that's a good enough anchor for where you are right now. Super. If you want to play a little more, same instruction, okay, we're big sky mind, watching the thoughts, And then adding a question, does this thought stream, this thought pattern, is it for my benefit? Does it bring me ease? Or does it stress me out? Would it be for the benefit of someone else? Or not? Would it be for the benefit of all beings? Or not? And if the answer is it's stressing me out or it's not going to be of benefit for anyone, can we put it down to not follow it, not follow that thought train? Put it down, change the focus of our attention. So we don't buy it. Like we hear, we're like, yeah, no, not that thought. So it's a practice in noting, is this thought of benefit to me, to another, to either everyone or anyone? If so, okay, staying curious and that flexing that muscle. If not, okay, stop. It's like if we were holding a flashlight on these different thoughts that cross the mind. Like turning the light off. Okay, well, I'm not even gonna think of that or look at it or read it. I'm gonna turn my attention elsewhere. And in turning the attention elsewhere, it could be back into the body. Feeling the hand on the chest, noting the breath. It could bring to mind a phrase, one of the metta phrases, may I be happy, may you be happy. Again, that sense of that the mind is looking for something to do. We don't want to go down that road where it's a thought that's stressful or not beneficial to anyone. But like, try this. May I be happy? May you be happy? May I be at ease? And just to play here, play with this, the flex in the mind. The thought comes. And again, that might be enough just watching the thoughts. But if you want to play with the second layer, is this thought of benefit to myself or to another? Is this thought stressing me out? Is it neutral or is it promoting ease? And then when there's a choice to make, it's stressing me out. Okay, then I'm going to put it down. I'm not going to pay attention to it. I'm going to look elsewhere. Another thought will surely come in behind it. So just to play with that, if it feels like it's too much mental energy, let it go. Don't worry about it. Again, if it feels like if it's a benefit, try it on. If it doesn't, let it go. Okay. Please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we notice, play with the anchor offered. If it doesn't fit, then don't worry. Okay. Enjoy and thanks. so nice to sit together. Yeah. Wanted today, we're still in the beginning terrain of the Parmes. Trying to get so stuff like Ajahn Sutito's fabulous book, Parmes Ways to Cross Life's Floods. It is available on ebook if you for free. If you don't have it, we're doing sort of the walking through the 10 perfections of the heart, and we are on the third. The first one, generosity, the opening of the heart. The second of sila, integrity, morality, virtue, and today renunciation and letting go, which is always tricky. It's always someone's like, "Well, just let that go." Like, well, yeah, if I could, I would. It's such an odd thing to be told to do. And it's also like, go into what? And there's always one of those questions that come with it. But the teachings, particularly from Ajahn Sutito's book, it's really letting go of that which doesn't serve us. That it's not about letting go into this very austere ascetic life. It's just more, much like what I was hoping to point to in the guided instructions, is like, what's not serving us? And can we kind of release the grip of that? Again, letting go is a little complicated, but sometimes it's like letting it be or putting it down can be more helpful. And the question of what exactly are we trying to let go of? It's to, in some ways, it's sort of thoughts, words, and actions, sort of that which is not for our own benefit, benefit of others, benefit for all. And more internally, really looking at where are the, I don't know about you, but I know if I start to worry and get caught in fear, something I have a lot of skill at, I've had many years of practice doing that. Nothing really good ever comes of that. Rarely do I feel better if I've worried something. I'm confident my daughter has not benefited from my worrying at all. And so it's pointing to that, like, well, what if you don't? Like, do you actually have control over it? Probably not. Then don't worry about it. And Dalai Lama is saying, like, if you can do something about it, by all means, do something about it. If you cannot do something about then let it go. Both paths are like this idea of the perseverating, spinning mind. Nothing good comes of it. And again, it's really easy that we can talk about, like, oh, yeah, of course, I know how to do that. Well, not when we're in the middle of it, right? Which is why it can be helpful when we're not caught in the spinning mind to be able to have that pivot. Like, when the mind goes here, I'm going to move it over here. And for me, to be able to move it over into the phrases of the Brahma Viharas of loving kindness, of compassion, of joy and equity, may I sit down in the middleness of this. May I be at ease with the unflowing nature of my life. May I be at peace. Even when we're super agitated, like, as a way of giving the mind something to do when there's a lot of energy in the mind, here, do this. Change the channel, play this song, you know, as opposed to kind of continuing to spin, which can be so detrimental to ourselves, to our health, to the people around us. To read a little from the book. So the first three perfections establish a vehicle, again, that generosity, morality, integrity, and renunciation. So those first three establish a vehicle in which to cross over the floods. Renunciation also takes it further, so it has a bridge. It pushes the boat away from the ground that the floods break over. It takes the mind to a more stable place where it can gain access to great ease and clarity. So, like every other parami, renunciation supports and depends upon wisdom. Wise renunciation goes against the current of gain, a very powerful assumption that happiness comes through having or storing up of something, even a spiritual something. This assumption, which promises a way out of dissatisfaction, actually supports the nagging insecurity of assuming that we are fundamentally lacking, inadequate, or needing to be propped up. So I love that. A way that the assumption that if I just get this, then my dissatisfaction will be released or eased. Or Carlita and I were speaking before class, the way we're kind of culturally kind of programmed. Well, when I get this, if I get into this school or I get this job or I get this relationship, well, then things may be better or worse, maybe, but that promise of if when is really, I think would fall more under the deluded way of thinking, because it doesn't work that way. That as these teachings continually point us to that sense of true satisfaction or ease, balance, steadiness, does not come from that grasping over there. It can come from inclining the mind towards. So the wholesome aspiration, like, please, may I have a steady mind. I just saw the note. Is it background noise still there? Did it lessen? Okay. It might be the lawnmower that was out there. I apologize. There's nothing in the room, so I apologize for that. Sorry. But that way of being able to work with, okay, what's not serving me, and how to make choices, and by coming to into stillness to watch, oh, this is where I get caught. So the insight practice is essential of being able to notice when we kind of switch into a thought pattern that's not helping us or is stressing us out. This is nice. Renunciation is not about repressing. Renunciation can only develop dependent on finding fulfillment through cultivating the mind. This isn't to deny that material support in terms of food and clothing, shelter, medicine is essential. Page 56 in my book. Isn't adequate food, shelter, or clothing is essential for human life, but to recognize that adequate may mean 40 pairs of shoes for someone, a $1 million salary for another. And so what's our sense of adequate or enough or satisfied? And again, the first noble truth, this human realm is, there's so much dissatisfaction. Something's not right. Move it, pivot. I'm bored. Move, pivot. You know, dissatisfaction is kind of baked in. So this profundity of these teachings are saying, yes, it is, and we can make choices to be different, to not be kind of shackled to that mind that is always dissatisfied. A sense of the satisfied keeps slipping away from the outreach of clenched hands into another one a little bit more. You know, back in the day, Nelson Rockefeller being asked how much money is enough, just a little more. This reason for this lies the clenching reflex itself. When we grasp, when we tighten up, we lose perspective and limit the mind's potential. Right? And to feel it, like, does that resonate when we're clenching, like, ah, the jaw gets said, I want to have this. We lose perspective and limit the mind's potential. There's a closing in, a lack of spaciousness. Yeah, crunch. In that sense, we lose balance. So we reach out for more and more and tip over, or the sense, kind of the hungry ghost, long neck, huge belly, and tiny little mouth. Like, there's never going to be enough, because there's always a sense of grasping, grasping, grasping. And I love that he brings up the mind does not thrive under those circumstances. The mind is going to be much more capable of the thinking into potentialities in creativity when there's rest, right? And the nervous system supports this when the body is in this tend and befriend in the sympathetic system, or at ease. There's a things are in flow, right? When there's a tense or in fight or flight, there's a clenching down. Renunciation, in the most obvious sense, entails introspective inquiry to look into one's wants and wisely translate appetite into relevant needs. And again, we're in a culture, dominant culture, that really pushes us to believe excess is good. Just, you know, houses are selling for, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, that's a form of arguably excess. And so what's the sense of adequate needs? We want to have housing, we want to be comfortable. Okay. And where is the excess, and what is the motivation of that excess? This wise discernment is a vital requirement in the world of total around-the-clock internet market. Asking, do I really need this? Is this for my benefit, the benefit of another? And we keep reviewing what is necessary, using reflections such as, what I get in terms of mind states is the result of how I act, and really being able to keep a good portion of our awareness on the mind state. Okay, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm getting this, I'm getting that. How is it in the mind? Is there an agitation, or is there a steadiness? And I think it's through our ability to take time to actually practice to be able to distinguish more easily when there's agitation and when there's stillness. Because sometimes when we're so busy, it's just all swooped in together. So one of the benefits of just sitting, what is it like in those earlier instructions of let's just watch at first, what are the patterns of the mind? Where does it go when left unbidden? Might go down the really familiar trail of worrying about whatever it is we might worry about. Or that, where does that anxiety land? Okay, and there's different pathways that we're very familiar with. Okay, again, is this helpful? Is this a good path or is this not so helpful? And so with the insight, the steadiness of the mind to be like, this actually doesn't feel good. I'm going to make another choice. I'm going to pick a different path, so to speak. In the floods, the tides were crossing life's floods, and the floods he describes as sort of the becoming something other than the egoic sense of I want to be this, I want to have this. So it's external to us, how we engage with the world, like status and sense pleasures, views, the rigidity of views. I feel like the line from the Metta Sutta, by not holding to fixed views, is said to be the sublime abiding. So a loosening, a flexibility, a spaciousness in the mind. And then ignorance. Fear, hatred, delusion, ignorance is the not knowing, unwise view. Manjushri comes in with his sword to cut through the ignorance and delusion because it is not onward leading in terms of our own path of liberation. It's tempting just to read this whole thing. Okay. Let me read one more part. So in order to, as we sort of are crossing these floods or working just moment to moment of where do we get caught in a fixed view or in ignorance or the sense of the ego wanting to be something other than, or it's the flip side of that, the ego caught in feeling so much less than. So it's that comparing mind. For purity, you have to have transcend rather than repress the flood. You have to know the pool of pleasure to feel it and to relax. You have to get to a sense of how attraction works and how to release the energy, referring to the awareness of it. This is a heart inclination rather than a technique, and awareness is brought to the fore through patience and kindness. And by what he's talking about here, as I understand it, is a sense of the pull of what do I want or what do I don't want, or the way we can get caught up, what we're drawn to pay attention to that. Like, oh, this is what this grasping or greed feels like. To not be like, oh, I can't feel this, it's bad. It's like, no. To really allow it to energetically be known. Oh, this is what this feels like. Okay, can I sit with it? Can I breathe it? Can I have enough space around myself such that I can pay attention to, okay, this is what this feels like, and to have enough faith and confidence in the mindset to be able to hold it and not get swept up in it. So he's really pointing to the importance, necessity of the awareness of, oh, it feels like this. This grasping, this wanting, this mind that is bored and wants to be on Instagram or Netflix or do anything other than sit. This is what the distracted mind feels like. Okay, can I sit with it? Notice what it feels like in the body, make space for it, and watch and see what happens. So it's not that immediately listening to an impulse or acting upon something. It's like, wait, slow down. What is this? Where is the motivation coming from? How can I learn more about what's happening internally before I then put that into action? As long as you hold on, this is about becoming. As long as you hold on to some idea of what you should be, ignorance has you on the run. Yeah. So these pointings to like, what's the motivation? Where am I trying to go? What's motivating me? Can I catch it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Can I just stay with the sensation? An example in the book is given about the night of the Buddha's enlightenment. He's visited by Mara, who has all these temptations, and being able to sit with, okay, I see you, Mara. And this is the same thing, the temptations that may come of the myriad of ways we can distract ourselves, and just noticing, oh, okay, not right now. I see you, not right now. And that, set a timer. Okay, I'll maybe in 10 minutes. So it's just really playing with where does our attention go? Is this a benefit to myself, to others, or not? Then can I make a choice? I'm going to share some a little some poems. From Talupa. Let go of what is past. Let go of what may come. Let go of what is happening now. Don't try to figure anything out. Don't try to make anything happen. Relax right now and rest. Sounds so easy. But this invitation of, and we hear this so many different ways of like, what's happened has happened, what's in the future hasn't happened, it's right now, it's right here. But this saying of like, let go and be right here, as trying it on just to see what it's like of let go of what's past. And in this moment, we don't have to sign on forever of never thinking about it, but in working with our moment to moment awareness, this idea of, oh, I can let go right now. I could not think about that right now. And then another minute comes, right? So it's setting a very low bar moment to moment to be able to flex this muscle and see how it is, what the experience is. This is from Julia Fehrenbacher, Release. This morning, as my eyes blink open, it occurs to me as if for the first time what you, Miracle Body, have been up to all night long while I let go. You pumped blood through veins to fingertips and toes, grew cells and eyelashes and nails, inhaled and exhaled countless times. All this while the sun tirelessly birthed new life. All this without a thought or a word or a worry, without a drop of help from me. I laugh when I remember that just yesterday, in a torrent of heart-numbing stories, I seriously thought I needed to do something. You know, this idea of like, oh, there is a lot happening. And can we have these moments in our lives where it's like, pause, pause, feel it. How is it to be in this moment with all that's happening in this body, which is said to hold all the teachings? Can we just rest and watch what the mind does? This expectation of always having to do something just for a moment. No. Can we release that expectation, which is just a thought, right? From the, the book about the first free women by Maddie Weingast, Damodina. For so long, I thought only of the river's end. Then one morning, I set my paddle down to watch the sun rise over the eastern hills, only to find myself floating somehow gently upstream. I promised it was not what I expected. And it's a beautiful imagery of if we slow down to be available to what's not expected. But we can't get there if we're clenched or we're tight. Again, the mind doesn't thrive under those conditions. The creativity, the potentiality of our mind thrives when there is enough spaciousness and gentle awareness, that sort of soft gaze. Then that energy can flow more easily. Yeah, that is serving generally to ourselves and to others. The title of this poem is This is a Poem for Someone Who is Juggling Her Life by Rose Cook. This is a poem for someone who is juggling her life. Be still sometimes. Be still sometimes. It needs repeating over and over to catch her attention over and over. As someone who is juggling her life finds it difficult to hear, be still sometimes. Be still sometimes. Let it fall sometimes. And I love that last line because that's sometimes what happens, right? We can't do everything all the time. Things will drop. Okay. Can we be still and when things fall? Okay. You know, since we'll never get through the to-do list. Okay. We'll never get through the to-do list. Some things we don't tend to. Okay. Then what happens? Can we live in that sense of be still and some things will fall? Right. A sense of beginning to sit down in the middleness of the changing nature of my life. That equanimity comes through there. We can't do everything. You know, we might want to control it, corral it, but again, there's that tightening down. Yeah, constriction is not a condition in which we're going to thrive. Okay. Okay, I'm going to read two more, and then we'll do an exercise. Letting Go by Stuart Mercer. I'm heavy on this theme, I realize, but letting go in order to let in, releasing in order to receive. Nature's coded messages become clearer the less we try to see. Trying hard, trying harder and harder, trying so very hard is not the way. We need commitment, yes, and focus and hope and faith, and trust. But most of all, we need ease, a discipline of ease, not trying too hard at all. You see, trying hard has a cellmate called giving up, admitting defeat like black and white, like pushing and pulling, no peace there. Not yet, you say, I'm not ready yet to take the step beyond. I know, I've stepped so slow myself, still do. But love, sweet sister, like death, comes in a moment's heartbeat, then goes. There are no ways to hold except by letting go and letting it be a part of you and you of it. Okay, one more poem and then we'll do an exercise. So this is called One Morning by Rosemary Wotola Trommer. One morning, we will wake up and forget to build that wall we've been building, the one between us, the one we've been building for years, perhaps out of some sense of right and boundary, perhaps out of habit. One morning, we will wake up and let our empty hands hang empty at our sides. Perhaps they will rise as empty things sometimes do when blown by the wind. Perhaps they simply will not remember how to grasp, how to rage. We will wake up that morning and we will have misplaced all our theories about why and how and who did what to whom. We will have mislaid all our timelines of when and plans of what. We will not scramble to write the plans and theories anew. On that morning, not much else will have changed. Whatever is blooming will still be in bloom. Whatever is wilting will wilt. There will be fields to plow and trains to load and children to feed and work to do. And in every moment, in every action, we will feel the urge to say thank you, and we will follow the urge to bow. So I ask you to close your eyes and just take a moment to kind of reconnect to your body, kind of pulling energy away from the screen and back into this form here of yours. Feet on the ground, noticing the sit bones. I wanted to play with this image of one morning we will wake up and not build. But before that, I want to see if we can kind of play into this notion of we wake up in the morning. What is it that we do build? Is it the to-do list? This is what I have to do today. And we build that up with some excitement or with dread. Do we build up any case in support or against any other human? And asking just to kind of consider that sort of upon waking, sort of what do you notice as you reflect back or imagine into what is the mind building in terms of your day or week? A list of worries, a list of things to do, a timeline. So building a sense of spaciousness, whatever that might look like. And just to play around, if we were to give it a form, what might that form be like? Again, on habit, as we wake up, what do we habitually build? All our ideas, some may be fixed, some may be rigid. Our ideas of how things should go, how our body should feel, how our loved ones should be. All of that can come with a quality of rigidity, of distancing, the weight of expectations or shoulds. So that might be the familiar, the conditioned morning. then I'm editing a different morning. We wake up and we will have misplaced all our theories. We will have misplaced all our to-do lists. We will have misplaced the timelines, misplaced the sense of how our bodies should feel or how others in our lives should act. We will not scramble to write new plans or new lists. Can we exist in that space that is free from any construction materials? To be in a place where the empty hands stay empty and the breath can be felt deeply and the sights and the sounds can be taken in and the body can be still. The body can be still sometimes. The mind can also be still sometimes. The mind can also be still. And maybe to just linger there a little bit more, feel how that might be in the body. Just noting how it feels through the center of the body. And then noticing in the jaw how that might be, the shoulders. If we can really let ourselves embody that sense of, oh, the body can be still. The hands can remain empty. The mind can be still sometimes. Thank you so much. I'm going to stop there. Wishing you all a beautiful first week of September and the echo of the full moon. And hope to see you next week.